With our special guest tonight, Wayne Herschel, will take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Wayne, of everything you've researched here, and I mean, you've done an incredible job, is there one area on this planet that stands out the most? Is it Giza, or is there some other regions that just seem to blow your mind?
I think the Giza picture, because we're looking at about 50 pyramid correlations with all of the constellations, and not just any stars, and that the solar temple, the one that matches the sun-like star, is right in the very, very dead center of it. I think that's the best. And I think it's also quite amazing that the second one would be Angkor. Angkor Wat lays out another constellation that's on the other side of the Pleiades constellation that shows from a different angle how they used two other stars of Perseus to locate the mystery star, which we know was sun-like.
What's your take on the city structures at Cydonia? Not the face, but some of these, the looks, Richard called it the fort.
Yeah, I would look at it as a pyramid collective, like we have at Abusir in Egypt. I think the two were originally exactly the same looking. The layouts are definitely more geometric than the stars. If you take all these star images and go back 17,000 years, that's when everything fits exactly. It's amazing that the Pleiades area stays very similar to how it looks today, but the little sun-like star being close to us appears to move greatly. And this is where I came across the 17,000-year-old theory. But I wouldn't really call it a city as such. I think it's just a collective pyramid area, which brings up one more very important thing. What happens inside pyramids? That's a story on its own.
Well, what do you think?
I think it's an altering state that allows the human soul to be induced out of the body and the so-called astral projection phenomena, which we've kind of researched in human society. We call it an out-of-body event,
sure.
Near-death.
OBEs?
Yeah, I think this is an inducement of it, and it's well known in all ancient cultures that the mountains were sacred. They even meditated in caves. Take, for example, in Australia, the big red mountain right in the middle of the continent of Australia, I can't think of the name of it, Uluru. I know the spoken word for it. And in the Uluru Mountain, they had these caves where they called them Dreamland, and they had these so-called spiritual journeys.
These pyramids on Mars, can they have been formed naturally? I mean, is there any natural formations on our planet that would look like this?
Nothing at all. And I had an argument with a geologist just a while ago. If you take that five-sided pyramid and over the face mountain and put it on the side of a highway somewhere, let's say in the Arizona desert, I tell you what, there'd be a whole park built around it to admire how this thing is so amazingly like it, you know, like the real thing. I just, you know, looking at everything, looking at the geometry, looking at the face, looking at the eye, the nose, the mouth. I think it was a bearded man. The symmetry, it's actually made out of two ellipses, the top part of the curvature of the Mars face and the bottom, which I'll go through in my book, and look at a human face over there, and it's exactly the same. It's just too much. There's about a million coincidences we'd have to agree with to say that they're natural.
We're going to share you with listeners now, Wayne. Here we go. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast Around with Wayne Herschel. Hi there.
Hello, George, Wayne.
Yeah.
My name is Glenn. I'm calling from the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay, that's in Texas, Wayne. Go ahead.
Mr. Herschel.
Yeah.
Would you concur with what I understand to be that the state of the Giza Plateau isn't due to erosion, but in the 12th century, the mullahs declaring that they represented something greater than Islam? And they attempted to pull them down, yet all they could do was strip the casing. That's not due to erosion.
Yeah. No, here's something that fits in with that, but I think there's a different reason. And if you look back in the history of what we know, what happened in the whole of the Egyptian area pre-Cairo even, is that there was no need originally for quarries. The pyramids were there early. They were stripped. If you look at the satellite images on Google Earth of the pyramids, you'll see huge, big debris fields around the pyramids where they've been quarried, because there's even lines where the blocks were removed. And the sad thing is that the whole of the pyramid area of Egypt, it appears to have been stripped and used for building temples originally in ancient Egypt. And then in the earlier part of Cairo, they were massively excavated for a source of blocks. And in the area of Abyssal, to me, the most important part, the place that was once Memphis, that was the place they stripped down at least four pyramids down to their bases. And in Giza, I was looking for four other pyramid ruins and wondering where the heck they are. And there's one sticking out of the sand right near the Sphinx. And you can see the block-like similarity. But looking back at where they were positioned in an old cartography map, I think it's a 120-year-old map, there were actually ruins of three other pyramids around there that in a matter of 50 to 100 years were stripped down to nothing. So it shows that they were used for a source of blocks. How convenient.
What about the theories, Wayne, that these blocks were cut, quarried, and then floated down the Nile?
Yeah, look, definitely most of it came from the originally and the ancient Egyptian era. They might have had some of the secret technology to build some of those obelisks. And I would say there's quite a high probability that, for example, take one of those obelisks. Imagine what kind of boat is needed 1,000 kilometers down the river, that it's got to travel that incredible journey and be erected, and there's hardly a chip on it in its original state. You've got to wonder. Something would have to explain how they did that. So it's technology.
Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
This is Tina.
Hi, Tina. Where are you calling from?
North Carolina.
Okay, go ahead.
All three of you guys have followed your intuition, your intellect, and I can't commend you any more than to say that you all are very courageous, because you go against an incredible tide of, now I'm shaking. I can't even say what I was trying to say before to Tom. Wayne, I know you have had an incredible amount of struggle and sabotage, similar to Professor McCanny, similar to Jordan Maxwell, and Richard C. You're following your intuition and your intellect, and you're doing such an incredible job, as George, you are. But the last thing that I heard Richard say before you went on the break was that along with the Coast listeners and the guests, would agree with him that we have had so much deception and intentional to keep us in the dark about our true history. Well, the point that I want to bring up is that the reason that we are all so hungry for this, and we all have this like mission, this calling, is that our not only our true history, but our true source of our power, when they altered phrases from the Bible and took reincarnation out of the Bible, and also our changing our educational system. So we're hungry for our source. And Richard C., when you say that we're should be looking at that, that's where they went to, I just want to leave you with that, and if you could pick up with that again some more. Thank you so much.
Okay, Tina, thank you. I don't know if you want to comment on that or not, Wayne.
Sure. I agree with the way that this knowledge and importance of it has been totally covered up and withheld, because it does challenge the foundations of all religion.
Is that why you're on the run? Is that who's chasing you?
I don't even want to talk about it, other than go to darknessradio.com and look at what
we might have crashed that website too. By the way,
are you kidding?
That's what I got a couple earlier reports that they couldn't get in.
Oh my gosh! Well, people just remember that name and then have to go back later, because they will be running again. But it seemed to nearly come out of the ark at the time of Leonardo da Vinci in the Renaissance age, because in his paintings he has encrypted a very old Vitruvian man who, strangely enough, had the source of the amazing geometry in the human form 2,000 years ago. That's at the time of Christ. Vitruvius showed the human form coming from something amazing in the universe, something that's been created by an all-seeing creator. That's where the all-seeing eye came from. And there was a German, call him an esoteric, that did a similar thing to Da Vinci and showed this Vitruvian man in its true form. And they burnt him at the stake. And I think Da Vinci would have known that. And I think that's why he showed the Vitruvian Man more simplified. I have put the original Vitruvian Man on my website, and you can see the arms raised in the upper position, and that overlays over the five-sided pyramid on Mars. It fits in Giza between the two largest pyramids, literally holding Orion's belt, so to speak, showing you the way in the cosmos to follow to find where the star is. So, now, what's hidden and the meaning in these star maps is very, very easy to make sense of. And this is the part that I'm having the biggest threat with. The paintings have been sabotaged. I tried setting them up at the Westminster Archives in England a year ago. And I won't even go into what happened. Even my publicist can't explain what happened. And he appears to have been beaten up because his face was rather battered and couldn't give me any answers. He didn't even ask for the bill. He just said, sorry, I'm out of here. And that's the end of it. So the painting side of it, this human form, it's a man inside a five-sided pentagonal shape. It's the proverbial pentacle. It's a five-pointed star. And it's showing who we are, where we come from. And, you know, it looks like it challenges the basis of general religion, but it doesn't. There's a Christ story that fits in here, too. I don't know if you followed the latest Judas text discovery. Now, in the Judas text, it's seen on National Geographic, they seem to have just brushed over the most important part of it, where Christ says to Judas, behold, I here pass on to you the most amazing secret, to take forward kind of thing, and says, behold, and he puts his hand up to the sky, and he says, there are those stars. This star is also your star. And what amazes me is National Geographic showed three stars in a row pointing to this mystery star, and they had no comments. You know, what inspired them? Is there something on the text that shows the actual, little stars printed on it? Because they're not showing it. And nothing's happened since then. They just kind of left it in the air and more interested in the Mary Magdalene story. Gosh, let's get to the basics.
Well, those Judas Gospels, you're absolutely right. They only touched on just a little bit of it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
When your guest throws around figures like 200,000 years and 65 million years, I was wondering how he arrives at that and how he calibrates whatever gizmo he uses to come up with that figure.
Richard has a large slide rule when he comes up with those numbers. No, they're just based on his research. Obviously, the evidence is subjective, and in this particular case, it's his thoughts, his theories that this happened 65 million years ago.
And he
believes, though, and others have said that there's a foundation under the pyramids of Giza that are much older than the original structures. And you know what? When you start adding things up, they could be much older than most people think.
Yeah. So it's basically intuition.
Intuition and looking at and trying to interpret data that's out there. But it's his interpretation.
Yeah. I was just curious, because I don't know how you would calibrate any gizmo, because you'd have to have something that is known to actually be 200,000.
Sure. And if you want, go to his website, because he lays out his ideas. It's enterprisemission.com if you have a computer.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Wayne, I want to sum up a little bit your claims, just to review a little bit, that you believe that humanity, us, came from a star system in another solar system conducive to life like our own. They came here, colonized Mars first, then they came here 17,000 years ago. Are you saying that Adam and Eve, and I've always thought this, as a boy I thought this, but Adam and Eve were space travelers?
Well, the direct Hebrew translation is humans, and Eve means to give life. There's many. That's just one story. That's just the one part of that little, ancient story. If you look back in all the ancient stories, they all speak of these great visitors from the sky. It's got to be real.
Okay, next up, let's pick up our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
George, hi.
Hi.
Welcome. Hi, it's Marcella in Arkansas.
Okay.
How are you doing?
Good.
I think I have something that might be of interest to you and your guest and also your listeners. I have been reading some of the Ruth Montgomery books that were published in the 70s.
Yes.
And you probably are familiar with these, but this was given to her from her spirit guides via automatic writing, you might recall. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, though.
Okay. Well, a couple of things that are in the book that I think you might find interesting are that the guides place the advent of Homo sapiens on Earth 5 to 7 million years ago. Also, they claim that the pyramids were constructed by beings who had the ability to disassemble and reassemble atoms. It blew me away when I read that. What do you think of that?
She might have known.
Well, and I wanted to present this because even though this is channeled information, and some people would buy that and other people would not, there's just amazing stuff in this little book, and I think it relates to what's been discussed tonight.
Ever, are you familiar with her, Wayne? Ruth Montgomery?
But I'll tell you what, you know, I've actually, I can't research mediumships or anything like that. I've tried to be as strict as possible with the research because I know people laugh at the subject, so you've
sure.
really got to stick to the rules. But you know what, the more I laugh at these other ones, the more they come laughing back straight at me. For example, the remember the Bible code story?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, they did another one, and I was the first person to tell all my friends, oh gosh, you know, you can make anything out of these correlations. If you use a computer, you can even have drink more pop. You know, you can make anything you want. But the new one, the new book that this guy brought forward hit me straight in the face. It's just saying that they're going to find this meaning of this solar obelisk. They're going to, you know, I just don't know how they do it. But you've got to be careful who you laugh at now.
The face on Mars looks very close to some of what we've seen in Egypt. Looks quite like the face on the Sphinx, for example.
There's actually a better example of the similarity. The god Sothis. We covered on the Whitley Strieber show that there's a drawing, more of a sketch type. I don't know where the source came from, but it is ancient, of the face of Sothis, who was an ancient god of the original sort of foundational gods of Egypt. And it looks almost like the Christ face with the hairstyle, which is like the Turin shroud. We have that image. It looks almost identical to that. And you know, it's human. That's more important to me. But I think the important part is to look at the overlays that I've done in the book, where I've shown the latest high-resolution image. Look at the eye, nose, and mouth, and the larger bottom part, which I think symbolized a beard, because it's a very long face. I think it's human, and that's what really is more important than anything, and it's on another planet.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George, Wayne, this is Lyle from San Diego.
Lyle, welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, about a year ago, I was doing an out-of-body excursion, and this time I went straight up, and I was passing the moon, and an entity grabbed me and threw me back to the ground, back to my body, and told me to knock it off, that this is a prison/forced rehabilitation planet. Don't try it again. So you are correct about that. We are not from this planet. Humans were developed here in order to keep us here, and we're supposed to be here, but to fix ourselves so we can rejoin our brethren in the ether.
Well, we might need a lot of fixing, Wayne.
Gosh, that's quite an interesting story. You know what? The out-of-body story. There's millions of cases. I can't laugh at that. That is the reality. You'll see in the front of my book, I had a near-death experience myself, so I know there is consciousness that can exist. You can exist. Your thoughts, the you who you think you are, can think outside of the body. So this is an amazing thing, and I think that's what happens inside the pyramids, that it's an inductional process using a natural earth energy, and it resonates the actual soul, your consciousness, out of the body to travel and visit perhaps the place of creation itself.
And you believe we're dealing with something physical here, not dimensional?
I'd like to think still, I don't like thinking hyperdimensional, multidimensional. I still think we've got to learn to walk before we can run and just look at the real basics, that there is the three-dimensional type universe. There's a core, there's a central place where the Big Bang took place. And I think that's where the creation itself is, the proverbial cosmic tree. And this is where we come from. That is home. That is the place of the soul. And we've got this chance to re-learn about it and meditate in mountain-sized objects and develop something that's perhaps even de-evolved in our brain, the pineal gland. You know, something like that must explain why we've lost it.
We'll be back with final questions with our guest Wayne Herschel on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Rosemary Ellen Guiley will join us with a whole bunch of things, a potpourri of items, ghost research, demonic hauntings, dream encyclopedia work. So that'll be all on our next Coast to Coast AM. Wayne, if all this machinery and craft, everything came to this planet, I mean, where is it now? I mean, it's all gone, other than the pyramids.
Yeah, I think it goes back to my reason for why I'm so sort of stuck with the 10,000-year Earth cataclysmic event. Something's ended everything, and we have these giant monuments that perhaps the only things that could survive it if they were built pre-flood sort of story. You know, these people would have evacuated, taken everything that was on the ground before the floods came over. And you can imagine if the oceans flood over all the land, there's nothing, it's all going to wash into the bottom of the ocean. And to travel these distances take many generations for them to come back again and pick up people. They're going to look at two or three generations lower down, the children of the children of those survivors. They're going to be living like cavemen, and they're going to think these are gods. So, you know, that explains it to me. That is the most feasible reason why we started from ground zero again 10,000 years ago.
Okay, let's go back to the phones now. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Richard in the City of Angels up in San Fernando Valley.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well, and you?
Good. Thank you.
I had started out with, it was going to be a question when Richard was on the line. We'll have to make it a comment, and maybe you can follow up with him at some time. I also emailed you this, but thought I'd call in anyway. When he led up to his announcement of the 200,000-year figure, I wasn't surprised at all. I assumed that's what he was going to say, and was surprised only that he said he'd never said it before on the air. I've been hearing that attributed to him for about 6 or 8 years, just through friends.
You know, it's the first time I've ever heard it come from him.
Well, but here's the difference. He was talking about, as you said, you know, through the slide rule or whatever.
Right.
But I'd heard that he'd recruited a geologist, to examine the Sphinx, and that expert had come up with exactly that figure. Now, I'm wondering, possibly it was Graham Hancock. I don't know. But this exact figure of 200,000 years has been going around for 6 to 8 years.
Attributed to him?
Well, yeah, attributed to Richard.
Okay. Well, we're in connections with him, so I'll send him a message and see what he says.
If you have time for another comment, you were just saying, where's all the technology? Have you ever heard of a book called Operation Trojan Horse?
Yes.
Okay. So in there, there's an experiment. Have you read it or you just heard of it?
I just heard of it.
Okay. You might want to look it up. There is in there, and I haven't seen it in 20 years, but in any case, the author, I believe, was the individual who set up an experiment with a transmitter on one side of the Great Pyramid and some sort of receiver. Let's say it's radio signal. I don't know. Something going through which he expected that if it were just rock and space, that his signal would go through uninterrupted, and it turned out to be wildly jammed. He's of the impression, apparently, that there are actual artifacts. I believe he actually said ships inside the pyramid.
Ships.
That's, again, it's 20 years ago, but that's my recollection.
Ships being water ships or craft?
No. It's spacecraft.
Spacecraft.
Yeah.
Great theory.
Lastly, just about a year ago, you did a program about high-tech remnants being found deep in the earth, for instance, in Virginia, large walls down 2 miles deep in a mine, and artifacts, meaning equipment, that dwarfed the dumpsters that they were next to in the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yes.
So they're there. They exist, these remnants. And I agree with your guest. Probably we've got, and maybe, as I think your previous guest a year ago said, there are cyclic cataclysm.
Well, here you go now. Here's a note from Richard. It says the geologist was Robert Schrock, S-C-H-O-C-H, mm-hmm. John Anthony West's person. The conversation was in Boston, and Schrock seemed shocked at the dates he was getting.
Uh-huh.
Hold on, Richard, quit typing so I can read these. And he brought them back, and that was about it. Richard sent me about 19 messages here, so I lost the rest of it. Okay. But it wasn't Richard.
Well, yeah. Okay, good. Good. Right. Thanks for that. Yeah, I actually met him a few years ago.
Okay. Whoop, I lost you. All right, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, this is Bruce from Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Bruce. Go ahead, please.
In defense of what Mr. Hancock said about these two pyramids pointing its direction to the stars,
yes,
in which they went, the person in South Africa said that he did not believe that they had time to build something like that. Would an advanced civilization who already had experience building buildings of pyramids of this type not be able to just put something up in time or in a short period of time, considering how much time it took the man in Florida to build the castle, the coral castle? It took him a little while, and it makes sense. It just makes sense of what, and I would like a comment on something like, I'll listen on the radio.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Wayne.
The monuments on Mars, strangely enough, are well over five times the size of the Great Pyramid, so we're talking an incredible amount of volume there. The thing that makes me think that it's something that was revering, a wonderful thing, was to show who we are, where we come from, is because if there is such a thing as this galactic civilization that goes colonizing worlds around, you need to show your flag. You need to show something that's visible from space. Here's the most amazing thing about my research. These monuments and the cryptic message in the monuments that I show in my book, they're made to be visible from very, very high, deep space. I mean, the Stonehenge message, using this Vitruvian Man correlation showing who we are, where we come from, it's made to be facing up in the sky, not for us. We've stumbled upon it, sure, because we've got satellite images now. We can see it from above and make sense of it. So I think it's who we are and where we come from. Still, there's a lot more other reasoning, but it's all part of my second book, and it deals with the movement of that star. It only fits exactly in place of where the Mars face is 17,250 years ago, and that to me explains, gosh, that's when this place was colonized.
Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, sorry.
What was that?
I just swallowed wrong. My name is Marcy. I'm calling from Rensselaer, New York. At least I'm presently delivering newspapers anyway.
Sure.
And I want to say it's a great show. You've been getting me through the night. And I hope this hasn't been covered at all because I've been kind of jumping in and out of the car. But my question is, the face on Mars, when was it first known to the public? Like what year?
I think it was... picture was taken in 76, Wayne?
Yeah, it's more than 21 years ago, but it only came to light quite recently with Richard's research. Probably, yeah, it was just before Richard. It was many years after, that's for sure. I mean, at least 10, 15 years after it.
And now, how long do they think that it's been there, and has there been any other recent comparison pictures taken at all?
They have. There's actually one fantastic, very high-resolution image that NASA were very decent to make available to the public. It was made out of about 6 million pixels that was downloadable. It was a direct overhead sun shot of the Mars face. And this is where I looked in very closely and could see the debris field showed block-like shapes, oblong debris that was by the millions all over this face, especially where it's been impacted, so it has a lot of damage on it. I took that image and overlaid the light and shadow from the 20-year-old images, and it actually gives you the fair three-dimensional perception of it. And that's, this face must have been there for at least 20,000 years in my research. So maybe it's older. You know, it's fun that we're arguing about how old they are, but the amazing thing is that they're real.
JPL made it public in 1976. Hoagland made it public in 87 with his book,
yes,
Monuments on Mars. Okay. Thanks, Mars.
Great.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
Hi, George. Hey, you know, in the Lost Book of Enki, Enki details, lays out in detail what and when it happened, when Tymet, our planet Earth, was called Tymet, and it had an orbit where the asteroid belt is today. And Nibiru came through, the planet Nibiru, about, according to the Sitges works, 300 million years ago, a moon of that planet struck Timet.
Mm-hmm.
What was left became Earth, and then it reformed. The debris that was left over became the asteroid belt, and at that time, prior to the impact, Timet was about, according to these texts, was about 5 or 6 times larger than Earth is today.
You know what's so amazing about that too is scientists know for a fact that the moon was made out of a collision between Earth and another object. And I mean, how would the Sumerians have known that 5,000 years ago?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just I think it all fits, and the information in this book, I believe, and I mean, it states that at the end of the book, it's word for not one word left out, not one word added. This is like a dictation from Inke of the history of Timet and Earth, and how they over hundreds of millions of years, and it says in that book why they came here, they were forced to come here. It gives a detailed account of the conditions on their planet. They were going extinct. Their planet was dying. They were forced to come here to find gold. They tried to find it at the asteroid belt, but they lost hundreds of ships and thousands of men trying to mine gold in the asteroid belt. And they wanted to come here, but this planet was off limits to them. Interplanetary, according to these texts, interplanetary travel was forbidden. And Alalu, the king of their planet, came here. He was fleeing for his life. He landed here about 460,000 years ago. He found the gold. He detected it, you know, on the planet when he was orbiting. He landed in the Gulf, and then Inke, his son Inke, came with 40 heroes. Those were Igigi and Anunnaki. The Igigi, you know, set up a base on Mars. They built cities on Mars to transport the gold from Earth to Timet to save these people, to save their planet, to save their race. And to make it simpler, they needed a worker. They needed it fast. The being that they found on this planet, the primitive being, our ancestor on Earth side, they took the genetics, the genes from that being. They combined it with their genes. They created the first worker, and that worker was a Neanderthal. You look at the burial sites of the Neanderthals up around Europe, France, Spain, Israel, and in South Africa. They date back around 460,000 years ago. That's when these people came here. And then later on, about 60,000 years ago, there was Inke found that the humans were degrading. They every generation they were going back. And the skulls of these Neanderthals will indicate that. So he had to infuse some new genetic material, and that was himself.
All right, Wayne, you don't entirely dispute that. You say it could have gone in hand with what you were talking about.
Yeah, I went through it with great detail because remember these, as that gentleman was saying, that they are direct translations, very carefully translated from 10,000-year-old clay tablets, and they've taken it literally verbatim, and it does have a scenario that would also fit, that there is some kind of genetic manipulation of humans to make us more adaptable for a world that is not naturally right for us. It's got a large gravity and we're very close to the sun. It sounds quite likely that they were trying to re-strengthen the gene lineage so we can deal with the great sunlight. We need more pigments in our skins. And there's a lot to that. But it's amazing that the Anunnaki, the gods of the Sumerians, were still identically human-looking, human-like, and they associated beauty with something that looks like them. So it's slight variations of the human lineage. And the Neanderthal lineage, I promise you, was so ape-like. It has actually been incorrectly shown as more human-like with the rebuilds of the flesh and the covering of skin. They were most likely closer looking to a gorilla. If you can just look at the gorilla skeleton and look at a Neanderthal, gosh, it's closer looking to a gorilla skeleton than a human skeleton. So, you know, go figure. There must have been more hair, more protection.
Bulky,
strength.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very robust. And, you know, it's typical of the bone structure of all the apes we have today.
First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, this is Robert calling from Portland.
Hey, Robert.
I had a question. This is an amazing show, and hello to Wayne and to George.
Sure.
My question is, with these kind of, we're piecing together, it seems, a story of where we come from, but my concern is, can we use any of that information to maybe triangulate who is in control of the planet now, or did any sort of remnants or legacy or entitlement was left to a certain people who are now using that to maybe kind of control things from the top? In our current society, what is the ramification? How does that tie into who's running the planet now?
Good question. Can I answer?
Yep.
Right. Where I said earlier on that the biggest resistance I'm having with my material is the message that's encrypted in the star map more than the actual star map itself, and it's the Christ story about the Grail, the Judas' latest text where it says, "Behold, the star is also your star." It seems quite likely that Christ knew his time was up. He would have known that he was going to die for it, and to carry the most important part of the story forward, he's allowed Judas to take this information, and you know, Judas was his closest intellect as far as it makes sense with this new gospel, that Judas would have wanted to try and take this sacred thing to the future. And it appears from a real life scenario that if he was important, he would have tried in the next day or so try and get it to the Roman authorities and show the sacred lineage secret. And it's not Christ's bloodline, it's showing that his star is also Judas's star. What it's saying is we are all divine. And there's a message encrypted into the Nicholas Poussin paintings and the Shugborough monument in the UK that has a reflection of the Poussin painting, and it's done in reverse and mirror writing. There's an encrypted clue beneath it that says that the human lineage is of divine. This is the great secret. And who's in control of the world? Gosh, you know, I think if this story were to get out at the time of Christ, we would have to obey what goes in with this divine human lineage story. It's saying that we should all be equals. Now, obviously, in ancient times, even more than Renaissance times, they had slavery in a really large way. But even in Renaissance times, when this story started coming out again from Vitruvius's temper that fits in the paintings, this human lineage protective story would associate men and women equal, race against race equal. That is the whole story that fits behind this, and it would never, never be allowed to get out.
Well, Wayne, I'm surprised you're able to stay on the air with us this long, because sometimes when we have someone of controversy, his line goes dead.
Well, it's coming close. I tell you what, I'm pretty worried where I stand right now, because another part that's still got to come out, and maybe you want to be a part of it, is the Vatican star map. And I've got to get it out pretty quickly, and I'm looking for a media way of doing it.
Well,
so
you know where we are. I'd love to take a look at it.
I'll send you a picture of it, and you can look at it.
All right, put a little description, too, of what you mean by that description, okay?
Yeah.
All right, Wayne, we're out of time, but I want to thank you. Your website, when it opens up again, is?
TheHiddenRecords.com.
You got it. Thanks, Wayne.
Pleasure. Thanks for being on.
He's a fantastic guest and very interesting theories. And it's kind of nice for Richard C. Hoagland to come in and offer his perspective. He knows Mars better than anybody else. For Dave Caprita, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, who should be on this weekend. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.